You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Ryan Stanger. I was a guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host, guys. And my guest today is Mano Agapian.
You got it.
I stumbled over the first part of your name because I was nervous about the last part. Mano Agapian.
You said it perfect.
Who improv fans would know from Winslow. Amazing stalwart improv team performs out here at UCB Franklin. We've known them forever and ever. I've known them forever and ever. And Mano, you'd also know from Funny or Die Digitals, Adam Ruins Everything, from John Gabris' podcast, High and Mighty.
Yeah.
You did the Taco Bell episodes.
Hell yeah.
Taco Bell Power Hour.
So fun. It does feel, I would say, more damaging to the body than a Power Hour. Like, it hurts much more.
Explain what... It's where you eat.
It's really where we've just celebrated some of the new items that came out in Taco Bell. We try to have them when something really big happens, like the quesalupa.
Oh, that's right.
Or
yeah.
The fried chicken.
You did the fried chicken, chalupa. The naked chicken, whatever.
Naked chicken, yeah. But it's just where we eat roughly $60 of Taco Bell and comment on it so we're chewing into microphones.
It's great. Yeah, so you do this with John Gabris on his podcast
yeah.
And Betsy Sodaro. And they're funny episodes. Worth checking out.
Thanks. It's fun to watch the energy dip. Like, it starts with, like, pure excitement and pure just sloth.
Sloth, yeah. Food coma sets
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
I always feel like that's a dumb joke. Food coma.
Food coma. It's always
dumb. I felt bad for making it.
Is it insensitive to comas?
I think it
probably,
is.
Probably, right?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Problematic for people with comas.
It's problematic, yeah. But also we could make the dad joke that they're not hearing it. That whole dad joke.
I feel like that's a little bit more biting and therefore forgivable.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? Because it's a little edgier. You know,
but we need a new replacement for food coma is what you're ultimately saying.
Yeah, I feel like that's lazy. That's hack.
It
I'm
is
pretty
hack.
People listen to the last episode, they know I'm hack.
I'm so hack.
I'm a hack from way back.
Mm-hmm. So but you make it look good.
Thank you. So do you.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's talk about you and improv.
Uh-huh.
So I know you from Winslow.
Yeah.
But did you do improv before UCB? I mean, where did you come to it?
That's a great question. Yeah, I did. I found improv in college. I actually had a very specific experience where, like, I did a sad play in college called Wojciech. Have you heard of this? It's a weird play. It's like a German surrealist play where a German man loses his mind and, you know, he has like a hyper-religious fit. Right. So like he's like, oh, I have to kill my wife to save her. And the sky's on fire because, the second coming's. So I did that play.
Bleak.
I got the lead, which I did not deserve.
You were the German guy that goes crazy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In general, I had a hard time getting cast in anything appropriate in college. I also played a lot of Irish roles. But
good.
Great,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Those dummies have been doing everything else
those
for
fucking
a while.
Dummies. Yeah. But
you hear me, you mix?
Yeah. That is really avant-garde, not hack.
Yeah.
But
thank you.
In college, and then I was like, oh, I'll just take an improv class at Dirty South Comedy Theater. So I took an improv class just because it intrigued me.
And you were going to Carolina? Where'd
yeah.
you go?
Yeah, North Chapel Hill.
Yeah, okay.
Some people call it Carolina. Same difference. Tar Heels.
The Tar Heels.
Fuck Duke.
So you were going to school out there. Were you a theater major?
I was at the time.
Cool.
But it's quite an intense theater major that I ultimately ended up bailing on. Because I found improv and sketch at this comedy theater that some people call DSI, but it's just called Dirty. Most people refer to it as Dirty South Comedy Theater. It's where I met Mary Sasson.
Oh, cool.
And other great people were involved in that improv circle, like Madeline Walter, Ben Green, Robert Stevens, CC Pierce. I mean, I could go on for a while.
And so that was separate from the school.
Mm-hmm.
And but a lot of students obviously were populating it.
Yes.
But so you started there, and then what was your experience there? Was it long form or was it short form games?
It was both. Like, I remember the theater did a little bit of both. They did short form because they thought like that's what audiences would come watch. But they also did long form because I think the people who started that school, Zach Ward and some other people, did training in Chicago.
Okay. So
they were kind of trying. And I think just colleges have always had a curiosity for long form.
Yeah. I've heard that. Yeah. Like, I didn't get it in my experience, but I would always be like, we had this long form book and we tried it. We were doing it wrong, but we tried it.
Hell yeah.
So very cool. So did you watch shows there or did you just start with classes? Did you see a show there and that changed your...
Yeah, the crazy thing is I just liked improv, and I ended up taking a class even before I'd seen a show there.
Great.
So I started taking class, then I started watching shows there. I really loved it, but I loved it so much. I mean, and then, you know, I was immediately an improv kid. Just immediately like, yeah, I'm going to watch three shows tonight, and that's my weekend.
I think that's where all of us have this, like, this kinship and connection is that— you see it or do it, and then it's an immediate love. Like, you fall in love. Like, it's a love affair. And it's like it becomes like your whole life. I was talking about in the last episode to where I was able to eat, sleep, and breathe it, but it never felt like work because I was just so passionate about it.
And for you, was it in LA or before?
In LA, it was UCB.
Yeah.
I never experienced it before that. But so you took it and you're just like, oh, this is home.
Yeah.
Did you get on, do they have like main stage teams or house teams and stuff? Did you get on a team there?
They did. They had teams there. I got on a Herald. They had Herald teams there.
Oh, you're doing Heralds up in that
motherfucker. They were doing Heralds up there, but my God, they were the worst Heralds in the whole world.
Right.
Like, but I mean, I think that was part of my growth was like, I really, for me at least, I wasn't like, I didn't take to it immediately. I needed to get a lot of bad improv out of my system. So like, I was on a team called Baby Liberty.
I've heard of
it. Yeah. yeah, you've heard of us.
Yeah.
And then another team called Proletariat Princess.
Yeah, I know that too.
We were like, oh yeah, we're really nailing it with these improv team names.
I like them.
Yeah. But yeah, so I did a little bit of Herald out there, but they were so bad. Because at that time, I was the kind of improviser who was just like, oh, I kind of want to do a scene like this that might sort of loosely sort of be inspired by the opening. So
gotcha.
I'll do it.
Yeah, you were just writing on the back line and just jamming it in there.
Yeah. Or doing improv where you're like, I have this idea, so I hope that my teammate will respond this exact way, and then we'll do this exact scene that I envision.
Buddy, yeah.
It was crazy.
When it doesn't happen, you panic and keep jamming that thing in there. It's like,
yeah.
I told you we're in a library, and you're mad at me.
Yeah. So I was actually very grateful for that experience because, like, I got a lot of shitty stuff out of my system before coming to L.A.
That's part of it, right? It's like having the wiggles before you sit down. You got to feel what it's like to do bad shit before you can start knowing what you like.
Totally.
About doing it well or how to even do it well. Well,
totally.
How did they drill you guys on Heralds? Like, what were your practices and exercises like?
Yeah, that is a fantastic question. I think we were just doing Heralds.
So you're just doing the actual form.
We were just doing the actual form, but I mean, I also think there was a lot of like theater mumbo jumbo tossed in there. You know, a lot of the ritual stuff that's like, we're going to sit in a room in the dark without talking for 45 minutes. And then when the lights come on, we're going to do a Herald. And however you feel is like that stuff, which I generally am against. I'm generally against that stuff that's like, I don't know, like method improv. I think method improv is a little kooky.
Yeah, it's kind of like, don't we do that all day anyway with our lives?
I know. Yeah, I'm a big fan of just clarity in improv. What's your comedic idea? Great. Let's do that.
Okay, so let me ask you this then.
Please.
You move out to Los Angeles, graduated with honors, right?
Oh my gosh.
Magna
yes.
cum laude.
Magna cum laude.
Yeah. You turn your back on medical school.
Right? Yeah. I am literally like outrunning doctors who are chasing me in cars.
Yes.
Come. Please yeah. come to my medical school.
Right. Yeah. They own their own medical school. They got stethoscopes flopping around. They're trying
yeah,
to get
how
you.
Medical school
yeah.
works.
They all drive ambulances and shit. Everybody knows this. I'm not.
You're just repeating
I'm
facts.
I'm just repeating facts.
That are available to the world.
Yeah. So you okay. come out to Los Angeles mm-hmm. and do you immediately find UCB? Is it something you knew about? Do you have any context with it?
I did because in college, like, okay. So at the theater I was going to, they went to Del Close Marathon. So like
oh, cool.
I went to Del Close Marathon a few times in college.
Son of a bitch. Yeah.
Because the theater owner had a good relationship with Anthony King,
oh.
who was at the time the artistic director
in New York. Double son
yeah,
of a bitch.
Double son of a bitch.
Shout out to Tony King.
Woo,
we love you, baby. Great
Tony
job.
Tony K, as I call him.
Directing.
Yeah. So I went to Del Close Marathon, and that's, of course, when I was like, oh, they're doing the best thing.
So did you see UCB?
I did.
House teams, and you got to see them perform, or kind of like
yeah.
UCB All-Stars up
yeah,
there performing.
Yeah, I felt like some of those teams, like the Stepfathers.
Can you remember a specific show?
Yeah. I remember a Stepfathers and a Ruru show, which, of course, were just like two of the biggest teams. But like I remember a Stepfathers show where like Spo, as she affectionately goes by, Shannon O'Neill.
Okay.
She was like, I don't know, they were like fighting came up in a scene, and so like she just had this like crazy badass moment where she was like, okay, you want to fight, let's fight. Like they had a real fight on stage.
Oh.
It was like, so yes, so here's what I'll say.
No, that's great to hear.
It's
go ahead.
Wild. I wouldn't do that today, and part of me today smells a stunt when I see that kind of improv, but at the time I was just like, wow, this is so raw. This is so brave.
I think it's that whole thing of, you know, I mean, it doesn't come up in every show. Like if you're doing something big and physical like that every single show, it's like,
yeah,
take a break.
It's a
you
stunt.
Guys are good enough. Relax.
Yeah.
But if it's that thing where it's like, well, shit, we've talked about this long enough. Let's just do it. We can do this on stage.
Yeah.
And we've performed long enough together
mm-hmm.
to know that we can make this funny and we can make
exactly.
this part of the show in a way that's organic.
Yeah, it just has to be what it is. We don't have to make it anything that it's not.
Well put.
Did you used to do anything like that? I'm so curious. Maybe you've already talked about it on past podcasts.
What
did
meaning?
Did you have any like thing bad habits or stunty habits?
Buddy, I still got them. I will. No, I mean. So for me, early on, like the most success I would have is, you know, what's unique about me, we talked about it a lot in the last show, is that I'll commit, you know, like I really commit hard to things.
Yeah, bring that up as well.
Right. So the success I had was from committing, but at the same time, you get awarded for that success, you know, you can die a loud, painful death.
You can.
And it's just like, oh, this is just this guy screaming up there. And you're doing it with a lot of intensity, you know?
Yeah.
And if it works in the premise of the scene, it can be great.
Yeah.
But if it's not, then it's like, oh, this isn't what that needs. And you're just screaming for no reason.
Yeah.
And everybody's uncomfortable.
Yeah. But so. I've died just as many opposite deaths from just being like craving control in an improv scene.
Yeah.
That's one of my pitfalls is like, I would rather be in control of the comedic idea and the comedic premise. So I'm going to like attack it without that emotional commitment. And then sometimes I have the opposite feeling on the back line of like, I'll never know if that scene would have been made better had I just attacked it emotionally.
That's interesting. And because you perform with Winslow, there's a lot of mm-hmm. drivers on that team. Like there's a lot of people with great point of view and that are strong
totally.
Performers.
Totally.
So we'll take you back a little bit.
Please.
So
please,
you,
please.
You come out to LA, mm-hmm. You have a context or history with UCB,
yes.
and you jump into classes. What shows jumped out to you as like good shows that inspired you? Like, or what were you liking about improv where you were like, oh, I aspire to do that?
Yeah, I think like Facebook and Last Day of School were some of the first shows that like really stood out to me because I love some rambunctious I love rambunctious, energetic, like childlike playing wonder in an improv.
Yes.
And I felt like I saw a lot of that in those
shows. That speaks to your style of play. It's something that you're really good at.
Oh, you know? Thanks.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
So, yeah. So you're watching these guys and you're thinking like, oh, this is what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
And this lines up with maybe some skill sets I know I have.
Yeah.
And then you're taking classes and, where did the biggest growth curve happen for you? Was it while you were taking classes or was it after you got on a house team?
That's a really awesome question. I think it was in like the Herald auditioning process. Like I remember I auditioned like 3 years in a row without a callback.
Wow.
And like, you know, I knew that to, you know, progress in this system, I had to not be an asshole and, yeah, just keep doing the work, keep trying to get better, keep asking myself, what can I improve upon?
Now, is this something you felt like you had nerves in the audition room?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
Absolutely. You're
playing different.
Totally, playing that's, totally different.
That's such a common thing. We talked about it in the last one, to where you get good at performing improv with your friends.
Yeah.
Right? You get good at practicing groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this whole experience with like, okay, I need to take the same sensibility and style of play on stage in front of people.
Yeah.
That's a growth curve. And then I need to do it in an audition setting. It's almost like a whole separate skill. And so sometimes you can ice yourself to where it's like, I played completely different. I didn't, you know, they didn't see my best work. They didn't see what was special about me.
Totally.
And I didn't contribute to the scene. And I think it takes maybe to where it's like, you look at that audition is just another show.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is just another chance for me to do a show.
Totally.
So you had a successful show.
Yes.
And you got on stage with Winslow.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the growth continues.
We were so hooked up, though, because this was a time when I had played with all of the other people on Winslow at some other point, either in the indie scene, or I had played with Mary Sasson in college.
Right.
Even Echo, who most of us hadn't played with before, I had both my initial audition and callback with him.
Oh, wow. So that's a bond was forged.
It was already a bond there. So like, I remember feeling very fortunate that Neil Campbell, Angel Man was like, okay, be on a team with all of your friends.
Yeah.
So we got very lucky in that way. Because some people don't, you know, auditioning is so crazy. It's such a stapling together of talent.
It is. And that's, I think, what people miss sometimes is that, you know, a lot of it's your, like, how much work you put into it and your natural abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But then also there's like a luck component.
Yeah.
You know, because you can get on a team and that team doesn't have the right chemistry or somebody,
yeah,
you know, quits or whatever it is. And then that the energy changes and that team gets broken up and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a huge luck thing.
Huge
and that's,
luck.
Yeah. So that's a weird thing. So it's neat when it's kind of when everything lines up, like it happened with Winslow. You guys were friends and then also happened to play well together. That's not always the case.
Yeah.
And then we're able to bring it on stage. So when you started off with Winslow, did you notice or were you able to pull out like, oh, this is what we're good at or this is what we bring unique to the stage?
Yeah.
Because we're all doing the same form initially. We're all doing the Herald.
Yeah.
But every team kind of has their own thumbprint or identity. What did you think early on was unique about Winslow or maybe what did you hear about?
Oh, wow. I mean, you know, I remember thinking at very first, I've tried to do this for too long to get in my own way at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I definitely had a lot of fake it till I make it confidence going for me. I was like, just fucking fake this. Do not fuck this up because you're like letting a tiny voice in your head get the best of you. So in regards to Winslow playing style, I think, yeah, it was easy. It was just very easy from the get-go to be like, let's keep having fun on stage. I felt I'm trying to remember it without, because it was like such a blur. As you remember that that beginning of Herald Night is a total blur.
Yeah. And you know, in my experience early on in Herald Night, I felt like a fraud and I felt like everybody else watching was just like, oh man, it should be me. And that's, and I think that's a normal feeling to have as an insecure performer, but then also with, you know, when there's a lot of students that watch the show, you know, it's like, we're all like really close to each other. That's part of what's great about it. You know, it's because it's like your peers up there.
But
you
you're, so you got on after your first audition?
First audition, yeah.
But you really rose to the occasion. Because I know, and we've talked about this maybe briefly in the past, where you like committed to it like kind of maybe, I mean, I'm sure it's akin to the way you attack physical fitness.
That yeah, there was that. And then also I was telling Dan in the last one, your teammate, Dan Lippert.
Yes.
That I provided something that was lacking at the theater at the time, or at least what I could understand was a, at the time it was people were ironically detached.
Absolutely.
And so what I came in to do, because I just didn't really know any other way to play, was I would, you know, I would commit and I would behave very believably or realistically in situations mm-hmm. or make big emotional choices mm-hmm. that weren't detached, you know?
Something you still kind of that unique, that you have such a unique playing style to that not a lot of people do that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And that was, and that, you know, like I lived by it and I died from it for a while. But I was fortunate. Like I auditioned with Betsy mm-hmm. for my callback mm-hmm. and I was with her and like supported her well and we played well together. And I'm sure that's what got me on. Like, and, you know, a bunch of like serendipitous things, like teachers that I had just done 401 and 501 with when they had 501 back in the day mm-hmm. were also watching. So they knew me. They knew they were kind of interested in what I was doing anyway. Mm-hmm. So again, that's where that kind of luck thing comes in. Mm-hmm. But it's here's something I'll obviously speak to this. What I noticed about Winslow. Winslow, I felt you guys very early on mastered the skill of heightening in a way that I didn't see other Herald teams do. So I felt like you would see good games kind of emerge, right, for other teams.
Yeah.
And then there would be, like, you know, heightened within the scene or heightened within the show.
Yeah.
And then people would kind of plateau. It would be like,
yeah.
Ooh, I don't, and I would think as an, you know, watching it, like, I don't know where I would take it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Winslow, I felt like there was a bravery and a skill set and, like, a quality of performer to where you guys would, like, no, we're pushing past this. And we are heightening beyond it in a way that was like very exciting to watch.
Thanks.
And was, I think, purely unique to you guys. And it's still kind of a style of play that you guys have where it's like you can bring energy or interject energy in a way that you don't think it would be there.
Yeah.
You know,
early on, I feel like we were just trying to make each other laugh and getting good feedback from it. So we were like, oh, shit, that's awesome. Like,
yeah,
we are just trying to make each other laugh the hardest because I think we're all huge fans of each other. So I still to this day I'm in scenes where I'm like, how can I make my friend laugh more at this?
Yeah, it certainly shows. I mean, you run the risk when I compliment you, people will say stuff that's always like mildly insulting, like, you guys seem like you're having so much fun out there. It's like, oh wow, thanks. You
oh,
know?
Shit.
Yeah. I'm glad everybody else is bored. But I, you know, when I say that, it's like, yeah, certainly it's this kind of like, it's like bits on stage, you know, in a performance setting. But I would notice that like this energy and the skill to kind of heighten that was like, I always felt like it was inspiring. Who did you guys have early on as a coach? What were they having you guys do?
Yeah. Let's see. Our first coach was Alex Fernie, which was,
oh, that's interesting. Cause he's like a heady guy. You know?
We needed him.
Probably
bad.
Perfect for you guys who are fun and energized.
Goofy.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll go ahead and say it. So you don't have to, but like, yeah, certainly at first no one was accusing us of being game masters. Like, we got game, but we weren't the team that was like, holy shit, what? Look at how they're attacking game. I think early on people were like, they're really fun. So we had Alex Fernie for a year, which was so needed because he's so supportive, but so perfect at analyzing a scene of like, oh yeah, this was an opportunity to play a game. This third line was an opportunity for you to add some philosophy. This sixth line was where you could have taken a break from the game. Like, just like such.
Yeah, it's like enough with
ninja.
The math, Rain Man.
Yeah, you fucking freak. He's a freak and he owes me a quarter.
He's doing fine.
Yeah.
Hey, you just directed a fucking movie. Give Mono the quarter, you asshole.
Yeah, give me a fucking quarter, you piece of shit. We're not supposed to attack people. Yeah, we had him, and it was so needed.
So he provided some analytics and some illuminating critique and guidance.
Yeah.
What was there any exercises that he had you guys do, or can you think of, like, a point of, like, where his philosophy kind of rang true to you?
You know what was, like, even a surprising moment for him? Okay, I don't know why this really sticks with me, and it's probably just, like, an improv teacher trick that makes you love each other. We had one practice where we just, like, complimented each other, where like one at a time someone got up and the group and Fernie talked about what we enjoyed about their play style. It was kind of the thing where it's like, here's what you're good at. Here's some things you should venture into. Like, I remember mine was like, you don't play a lot of like James Bond types.
Yeah.
Why not try that? I remember that being a really awesome moment, even though it wasn't even necessarily, it was improv related, but it was morale related.
Yeah, morale. But also, I think it's something Lippert and I talked a lot about comedic voice, and mm-hmm. I have a question from him for you that I'll get to way later.
Okay, great.
But in speaking about comedic voice, I think there's something to be said about knowing what people think about you.
Yeah.
Because it may not line up with what you think about yourself.
Totally.
Or what people think you're capable of. And certainly in a group where you have to trust everybody, mm-hmm. it's helpful to like just sit like, hey, this, you know, and even you vocalizing it to other people.
Totally.
So I think that's helpful. I'd love to see you do this. You know, I think there's something to be said about that. I mean, it's kind of insinuated that you should trust each other because improv is all built on trust. But yeah. What are you doing to build that trust, you know,
yeah.
as a group that performs together regularly, especially if it's high stakes, like if you're doing it on stage,
yeah.
you know, on Harold Night. So that's cool. That's a good exercise.
It was really awesome. It's like just hearing that thing out loud of like, I think you're good at this. And literally you taking a moment to invest in yourself like, oh, I guess I am good at that. Whereas it's so easy in any profession, especially in comedy, to get in your head and judge your merits.
Yeah.
It's so nice to take a fucking break and go, you're good at things. Calm down. You're good at stuff.
Do you, when you teach, will you give personal notes in front of the group to other people?
Sometimes. It just depends on the moment. Sometimes I can just feel like I try not to get too Oprah, but sometimes it just comes up where I'm like, I just feel the moment coming and I'm like, you're standing in your own way. Like,
that's cool.
You're so funny. And in that moment, you stood in your own way. And that's a weird thing that improv notes can be life notes.
Yeah.
Very often.
I got this interesting note, and it was like this interesting style. I'll use interesting way too much. It's probably
interesting?
It's probably the worst word, right? It's the least expressive. Like, what does it mean? What does it mean?
It means
how
that,
was that movie? Interesting. It's just like
it means
so
that
lazy.
It fired a single synapse in your brain,
yeah.
which could be anything.
Could be anything. Mm-hmm. So it was with Wangert, Joe Wangert, mm-hmm. great improv guy, great teacher. He would give notes. I don't know if this is a regular thing he did, but this is a 401 class. He would give notes midway through the class, mm-hmm. and they were in front of the entire group, mm-hmm. and they were nothing harsh. Like he wasn't mm-hmm. dressing anybody down, but he would give people positive notes. This is what you're doing well. This is what you need to work on, mm-hmm. and this is what I want you to think about for the rest of class.
That's amazing.
And like at the time, for some reason, it was unique to his class, but I was doing characters all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not something I do. I'm usually just some dumb version of myself. But I was just doing characters all the time, and he's like, for the rest of class, I want you to play you, just like a version of you. And everybody hears me say this to you. They know that that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're not doing an over-the-top character. Free yourself from that. Mm-hmm. For me, it was like really liberating because it was like everybody knows that. They know if, you know, they paint me as some like, you know, like prospector that I may not be dag burning, you know, like I may not be doing the whole thing. It's uh-huh. going to be a prospector version of myself,
yeah.
you know? But I felt like, oh, it was like kind of liberating to just have it out in the open. I think, you know, sometimes like speaking to each other about each other,
yeah.
it was kind of an improv no-no. Like you're not supposed to note each other on
right.
specific performance.
Right.
But I feel like if it's done with a good teacher, like
yes.
Fernie doing it with you guys,
yes.
or you doing it with your students, can be yeah. kind of liberating.
It can be, yeah. And it's definitely an ensemble thing. It's got to be the right
yeah.
time. You got to know each other. You got to just have some history so that all of it rings true, you know, and there's that camaraderie.
What was the most liberating time for you in improv? Like, where did you feel a light go off? Like,
gosh.
Oh, I'm funny this way, and
yeah.
I can be myself in this way. Like, I'm not chasing something, or I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't have to invent anything.
It was definitely on Harold Night.
Harold
Night was so liberating. I remember, you know what it was? It was the second line of a scene. A lot of times just I would get, and we all love it, a huge laugh off of the reaction line.
Yeah.
Right? Which is so simple. Like it's really simple, especially when your teammate's setting you up with an awesome premise. But you know when you get that laugh, when I was getting those laughs off of truly, truly, truly just reacting, not trying to make the best joke ever. I remember those huge laughs and remember that being like, oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm doing so little. Or in my mind, you know, being like, I'm relatively doing so little. I'm truly just reacting to this awesome idea. And the audience agrees that's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, it's this weird, hard place to get to, right? To where it's like you put all this pressure on yourself to where you have to be like some wordsmith. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's just like, oh, I'm listening and how do I feel in the moment? Mm-hmm. And that also sets you up to be a good comedic straight man, which is, I think, definitely a skill that you have.
Thank you.
You play unusual with the best of them.
Thank you.
But I think you have like a unique comedic voice. So when you're straight manning or like calling out the reality mm-hmm. in something, there's certain people can do that in a funny way. And I think it's a skill of yours for sure.
Thanks, man.
So you've done improv a ton and you're around it a ton. What kind of shows do you like to watch now? Or what style of improv? Like when you see like, or even if you're performing it, like, oh, this is what I'm, this is biscuits and gravy. Like this is heaven right now. Seeing this or being involved in this.
Yeah. It's still the same. Like I love fun improv. I am not the most cerebral player in the world. Like I watch your Fernies and your Zach Woodses, and I am just in awe. I'm in awe of how their brains work. But I have high respect for that. But if I'm for watching, if like I want to watch improv that'll like almost take me out of it, it's still like fun improv. Like I get inspired by a lot of 101 people in 101, obviously. No matter how long they've been doing improv, because some people come to 101 already doing improv, some people don't. But just like the way that their mind is liberated.
Right. I heard Brian Stiles was in a 101 class, right?
Are you serious?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. commitment got me. Just the way that their mind doesn't think about, because sometimes we can look at scenes so robotically of like, we have our initiation, then you're going to react to it. Then we're going to say, if this, then what? The way that like people's minds are liberated from what an improv scene can be.
Yeah.
That's what I really respond to.
It's compelling. I mean, some of the hardest laughing you do is in 101 or coaching 101.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, oh boy, the lunatics, you know?
Yeah.
But then it's like this weird thing that you kind of try to get back to in some way.
Yeah.
To where it's like, okay, now I've learned all this stuff. I have all these reps. Now I need to get back to that essence. It's kind of
absolutely.
Like learning the rules so well that you can break them the right way, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, but then sometimes it's just people just breaking those rules is just funny. You know?
It's just funny. It's just there's something so raw about it because they haven't yet overly thought about it.
Yeah.
They haven't yet processed a million different rules and are stitching it into their work. They're just like, I said this. And it was funny.
Yeah, maybe there's no ego to protect too, right?
That's good, yeah.
You know, because you get to a stage where you're performing and you've had success, you know, and it's just like, oh, there's an expectation and I got to protect my ego, so I'm going to be a little too precious, you know.
It codes the way you perform or the way you think you should perform, or you base it based on other performances. All these things I still overthink to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you feel like improv is used best in show business these days?
That's
do you ever
really
watch
awesome.
Like a movie that you could tell is heavily improvised and you're like, oh, this isn't adding to story. Like this is just people riffing.
Yeah.
Versus like, oh, this feels so honest.
Yeah.
And maybe so funny.
Yeah. That's such an excellent question. Cause we've all seen movies, I'm guessing, where like that improv moment was awesome. And then you watch other moments where I was like, oh, that was funny on the day. But
yeah.
It's not so
stuff
funny.
I've done, you know, or it's just like it feels great, you know, and then you try to like just keep building on that and it just doesn't work. Like it doesn't add in. I don't know. I mean, I guess that's that authenticity to where you're not doing the math in your head. You're just speaking honestly.
Yeah. I'm guessing. And so you're saying where is it most applicable in other crafts, or you're saying specifically like acting?
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, like,
yeah.
Do you do, if you're auditioning for things now, will you improvise? Do you use that skill set?
I try to, I mean, I've, of what I am, I try to, but at the same time, I have to admit, I get in my head though, because I'm like, do we have a script or are we improvising?
Right.
Which are we doing? I guess like if you, and probably you too, you feel comfortable adding stuff at the end.
Yeah.
Or adding stuff that is contextualizing the dialogue already there.
Yeah.
But it's tough, even especially when you're in audition and you're trying to show them I'm understand the script. It's like it can be hard sometimes to be like, oh, I'm gonna do something totally different with this line.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's I always like comedic voice has been a theme, but it's like what's my voice and does it make sense for me to put this in my voice?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sometimes like you read something and you're like, oh, if you want me and what I bring to this, mm-hmm. I would say it this way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like knowing where you fit in an ensemble, you know, the same way on like an improv stage, mm-hmm. I fit in this way, you know, or I'm purely just the world. Like I'm the bus boy that's filling water glasses or whatever. You know what I mean? And like if it's in a script, it's like, oh yeah, it doesn't make sense for me to kind of change this or add that because it's part of this ensemble.
Right.
I don't know. What do you feel about, do you have a tendency to like, if you are playing a busboy in a scene, like, will you try to interject? Will you make it yours or do you hang back or do you do both? You do a combination of both, probably.
Maybe both. It just depends because, like I said, like, we're Winslow especially, which is we're very rambunctious. But I personally, I love clarity. Like, I always say clarity.
Oh, yeah, so you talked about clarity earlier. Expound on that.
Clarity to me in improv is what it's all about. Like, I had very, like, informational improv teachers early on, like Neil Campbell. I also had Joe Wangert, people who were just like all about a bulletproof initiation. And I still to this day like live by initiation that's like, hi, grandma, it's me, your granddaughter. I want to talk to you about this photo album that's filled with lascivious pictures. Like just an information.
That's great. I want to play in that scene.
Yeah. Just like to me, that's my bread and butter still is just like, let's start with a lot of information because I like clarity as opposed
laying
to
pipe.
Like, yeah.
It's all that, it's improv leg day.
App.
You know what I mean? It's like you avoid, why do we avoid that? But like, it's everybody relaxes then.
Yeah.
You know who you are, you know who you're talking to. The audience knows it. Right. And then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, for some reason, and like, I think we're bad at that initially.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we become bad at it again. Like, it's just like, oh, I just want to skip to the fun stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like the fun stuff is so much more fun when you do that.
That to me is what I've always just
so
loved.
So that's premise based. So yeah, that's how you like to pull is premise based. You know, it's hard
love
to pull off a good organic scene where you're just finding game.
It's very hard. It's very hard because it takes some of that aggressive label making.
Yeah.
To be like, in my opinion, the way you're doing that is unusual. Like, you almost, like, have to sew the word unusual into your improv. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, like, how... Because, organic is so hard.
It is, especially if you're a team that, you know, you guys are similar to us and that you usually will pull, you know, information from the audience.
Yeah.
Everybody sees it, and then you lift premise from that.
But you can probably feel it, like, when it's later on in your set, where you're like, this feels like an organic scene.
It does.
Yeah.
It does, but it's never organic from the start. And if you're used to being a premised pulling team, like, we've done something, we're just doing an organic show, where we do, like, one-word stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, we panicked up there. And, like, as veteran performers, you know, because it was like, uh-oh, we're being all nice to each other. Like, I don't want to mess up your idea. And the reality of an organic is, like, nobody has an idea.
Right.
So somebody's got to make some hard moves, you know?
Yeah, Susie Barrett one time said an awesome thing that still sticks with me when she said, like, sometimes the most selfless thing to do in improv is take focus.
Yeah,
you know what
great.
I mean? Like, to have that moment, and you guys had Susie for a while.
Oh, yeah.
To have a moment where you're like, okay, I'm crazy. Like, it's fine to do that because you're helping your teammate out.
Sure. You're giving the show what it needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about
so
you?
What's that?
I just want to ask you, what about you on that same front? Like, what takeaways did you like have, whether it be on Harold Knight or...
Oh, man. So many, my friend.
Did you already talk about breakthroughs on probably your episodes?
I did. And
I just feel so selfish where you're asking me all these amazing questions.
No, you're...
and
you're,
I'm just like, yeah, let's talk about me more.
That's why people are tuning in, and the anspers are inspirational.
Anspirations.
I was combining two words. But no, you know, for Harold Knight, man, one of the biggest things was just like... to not individualize shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all those reps, and then learning how to work in an ensemble.
Yeah.
And then trusting that to be funny. So now it's like I'll take big swings because I just trust the group will figure it out.
I love it.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, like you talked about where it's like, I have an idea in my mind of how I want this scene to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to, and like when it didn't go there and I keep trying to hammer that versus like, oh, leave, you did this, we'll do this, you know?
Yeah.
So that those were some big breakthroughs and like a lot from Susie that I mentioned too.
Next time on The Hooray Show.
Yeah. He's hitting the gym.
First of all, my name is Jerry O'Connell.
The fat kid.
A part of it. Tomcat's history.
Kind of cute, if you ask me. Romantic.
Falcon 420.
Falcon 420. Harrison Ford, look at that.
I peed myself.
Oh, God! No!
Oh! I'm a big fan, fellas.
That's awesome.
Get me my fucking grandfather's rug back, okay?
No, wow. We just went in at like midnight.
Can I ask you a beauty tip?
You're like Scooby-Doo.
Here's Dave Bazan.
Summertime just
God. That wasn't worth it. It was not worth it. Just don't
gotta listen. Everybody go listen. Well, what's it called?
The Hooray Show.
Hey, improv fans. If the suggestion for your next show is beer, maybe initiate your scene with something like, check it out, they've got Bronx beer on tap at this bar. It's the start of a great scene, and ordering a Bronx is a great way to start any night out. And Bronx is now the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx. And scene.
So I guess I can get to Lippert's question now. Because it's I think it'll open us up to some other stuff.
Okay, great.
Okay. He wants to know how your comedic voice has been affected by your background. Because it's extremely different than everybody else's.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. It's been super affected by it.
So that's your superpower, right? Because we all know improv the same way. We're all learning from the same school. We all have maybe similar origin stories of finding it. But you have a very interesting background and past. How has that informed your comedic voice?
It helps a lot. So in a nutshell, for everyone to know, I am Greek. I grew
you have immigrant parents, right?
Immigrant parents, grew up around Greek Middle Eastern kids, found out interesting things about my origins later on in life. Also came out as gay. So like, I feel like I have just, so in that way, I guess I represent what some people typically consider to be, smaller subcultures, right? Which you don't always see in the improv world.
Not at all.
In that way. And I think sometimes it's a benefit and some, not a negative, but sometimes it benefits and sometimes it hinders because sometimes my, like the experiences I can pull from aren't always the most relatable to plug into other improv scenes, right? In a scene where we are, you know, it's like, you know, when you're using flash memory exercise, for instance, and you're like, well, parties make me think of the loud, crazy Arabic parties I went to when I was a kid called haflas, where the old ladies would spit on the kids to keep the devil away. That's
Jesus Christ.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, well, I can't initiate with that because that will immediately become the unusual thing.
Yeah.
So sometimes it helps, though, because it's like I have a unique experience and it can help. Like I remember one time in a Winslow scene, somehow like insecure terrorist came up. Right.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to totally play that because I can play it without anyone feeling weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can play insecure terrorist. I did, and the audience responded to it because of clearly it had to be partially based on my appearance.
Yeah.
It had to be. So it's both awesome and then sometimes a hindrance just because I'm like in improv, we're trying to you're communicating with your teammates, and sometimes that requires shared experiences you've both had. Right, to sometimes
to build a world together.
Exactly. Have some sort of base reality. And if
you have a very specific world that doesn't adhere to like very common colloquialisms and all that kind of stuff, it can be like, oh, we'll have to just unpack all my weird shit.
Exactly. And then it's unpacking it, which is then it'll just take up the whole improv scene. So it's both.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, that's a learning curve for you because you have to acknowledge that superpower you have, but then also figure out a way you can make it funny and relatable.
Yeah.
Which is like another skill set versus just having the very common shared experience as everybody else.
Yeah.
So, and do you feel like, you know, if you represent like a smaller population of people and doing comedy, it's a hindrance in the sense that you lose the ability to fail anonymously too. Do you feel like a lot of eyes are on you because you're representing?
Yeah, I think so. That's so.
Like, I can come in as like, just like a straight white guy and nobody's paying attention. It's just like, if I do shitty, it's like, okay, great. Or if I do well, it's like, it's not anything, like it's nothing, you know?
Right, I do think you should not, and this is a thing I truly believe, is no one should be guilted for the experience they were born into.
That's great.
So be kind to yourself, because you have an awesome experience as well.
Right.
You just happen to have one that some people view as the majority.
Yes.
But that's not totally true, because you have unique experiences.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, yeah. I'm a big fan of letting people into my experience and that has mixed results. For instance, I like poking fun at my own culture. Like, I like playing a stinky old gypsy man. You know what I mean? And that has mixed results.
Yeah.
Because the audience is either like, I see that he's letting us in, poking fun at a part of what people view to be part of my culture. Sometimes people are just like, I don't want to laugh at that. Or it's just not funny enough, you know? Or people are just like, that's not funny enough. I'm not going to laugh at that. Right. So it has mixed results. But maybe you have the same experience when you're trying to like parody, let's say, like I've seen you parody like hyper-masculinity.
Yeah. Mixed results.
Mixed results.
Sometimes it's like, I know that's what people think about me, so I lean into it, and people go nuts for it, and it's great.
Yeah.
And then other times, people are like, yep, I figured you would, and it's not good.
Figured you would.
Yeah. So,
I would love to hear an audience member say that out loud.
Yeah. Figured you would, man. He's wearing like a Looney Tunes t-shirt where they're wearing like hip-hop clothes. I'm totally with you on that because sometimes it's like, oh, you think this? Well, let's lean into it and let's find out what's funny about it.
Totally.
And when it goes well, it's wildly satisfying. Mm-hmm. I also feel like if anybody's like scared to go somewhere, it's always fun to kind of go there.
Totally.
You know, but you win and lose, man.
Win and lose.
Yeah.
You guys, you got to be ready to do either.
Yeah.
You got to be ready to do. But yeah, it's hard. It's like.
Well, something funny I noticed about you, too, was that you would do these Grindr diaries, which were like Instagram photos of like your experiences on Grindr.
Totally.
And so what I loved about it was that they were great because it let everybody in on this world. But also a lot of it's relatable, too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you can have this experience as, you know, as a gay man and navigating the dating world. And then like, you know, people can like glean enjoyment from it, too, because it's like, OK, this is different than what I'm experienced. But also this is where we're the same in all these aspects.
Totally.
So that was kind of fun. I felt like that was unique, unique to your comedy voice, but also a way that was entirely your own, but then also completely relatable.
Thanks.
And then also a way you can kind of turn it funny. I've seen you do it in shows too.
Yeah.
You're
saying like, because like it brings up a great example. And just to clarify in case anyone doesn't know, I did this thing where I would like take pictures of Grindr conversations I would have that were, of course, insane because it's so hypersexual on Grindr. But by the same note, everyone's had those conversations, whether it be on Tinder or just texting.
Yeah, sexting for sure.
Yeah.
Once it's acknowledged that we're going to have sex and we're and we're corresponding via text, where we're not looking at each other, people let their guards down.
People really let their guards down. People say wild things. And people have different expectations of what the courting process should be. And some people think it should be, here's my butthole. I don't know. It's not without merit. But yeah, I have had similarly, like we're talking about parodying. I also have fun parodying gay people. And I feel personally as being gay, I should be able to do that. But it's the same thing we're talking about earlier. It's mixed results.
Mixed results. Well, you're goddamn right you should, because it's like I endlessly go up there and talk about, you know, the minutia of like a straight relationship that I have with a girl, right? And people laugh at it and it's fine. Mm-hmm. And yours is equally relatable, like being bored with somebody or, you know, being a jabbermouth or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, in a gay relationship. So you absolutely should. Or, you know, like me doing the hypersexual or the hyper masculine guy, mm-hmm. you doing like a hyper
gay. However you want to put it.
Yeah. It should be done, you know? But it's weird that it is mixed results and people get uncomfortable. They don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah.
But when it goes well, sometimes it's the hardest I ever crush, you know?
Totally.
Right? Yeah.
Do you feel like, yeah, I still question myself to this day, like, how responsible or irresponsible is it? Or in comedy, is it always going, is that just the nature of comedy? It's like taking weird chances, figuring out what's funny about it, especially with improv.
I think improv may be the last vestige mm-hmm. of that, because if you're doing stand-up and it's being recorded, mm-hmm. people now, the way that people consume stuff is you see somebody you like, right? I like that comedian. And then you go and immediately find all their stuff and mm-hmm. watch it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's all these like little time capsules of like, oh, I was trying to figure this out and I was making jokes about it. And now it's problematic. Like you can't.
Totally.
That stuff that they were doing before that they may have evolved or moved on from is there. And it, you know, people have a right to feel how they feel about it, you know?
Totally.
Improv happens in the moment, and very rarely is it recorded, and very rarely is it commented on after.
Yeah.
I feel like you can try stuff, and I feel like it is our responsibility to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially if you're a skilled performer, and, like, I feel like you are, I feel like I am in a lot of respects.
Yes, you certainly are.
To where we can satirize it.
Yeah.
And find out if it is okay to make fun of it or what is funny about that. And I think that when we don't or we're scared to do that, it's death. It's not a good thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of like right wing people or like the GOP hide behind political correctness as being something negative.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not. It should be that way. You should be judged by what you say. Yeah. But at the same time, there's a right way and a wrong way to do it.
Yeah. I love it. And to that note, let me ask you this. We are both fortunate individuals who get to perform at UCB after doing Herald Night. So fortunate. What goals do you have now what goals do you have now in improv? Is it as simple as I want to keep having fun? Or is it more like I want to work on this? I want to get better at this.
I want to keep getting better. Like I want to challenge myself to do, you know, more surprise. I want shows to, what my aspiration is to have shows that are 100% comedic mm-hmm. and entertaining that you'd expect if you're paying money at a comedy theater, but are surprising somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't quite figured out what that means yet. We've like in the group I perform with Bangarang, we've touched on it. We've gotten there. We've had moments, but it's never, you know, sometimes we're just doing good improv and that's enough and we're having fun, but I still want to do something that's maybe a little scary for me and that surprises an audience. But it's not self-indulgent. Like it's not like just some performance art thing that's
totally
like weird for the sake of weird, that surprises them, that they're able to laugh at it in the way that they are.
It's like that's a non-answer. For the most part, we produce, and this is making our work sound more important than it is, but like producing pop songs. You're like, that's a pop song. And you're saying you would love to stumble on organically more of those, like, what's that?
What is
like,
that? Yeah.
What did you just make?
Right.
In the midst of this pop CD.
Yes. And I think that I have the benefit, like you do, in having performed with the same group for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that stuff can happen. Yeah. You can either get comfortable or you can challenge yourself if you have that level of familiarity with the group.
Yeah.
And I turn the question to you as we close things out.
Okay.
Okay. You are now a weekend team, you know, performing at the Franklin Space. You've been doing this a long time with Winslow. What are your goals? Where do you see yourself?
Yeah. I want to surprise myself. I want to surprise my teammates. I want to, take risks and be able to commit in a way that is something I haven't done in the past.
Take risks and commit in a way that is something you haven't done in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Just commit to stuff. And I want to get better. I would love it if people were like, oh my God, even more consistently, like, how did he even do that. So I want to learn a little bit more from some of the more cerebral players, or from some of the more emotionally hyper-committed players, and sort of just, yeah, try that on. Maybe go from being the funniest, because we are such a funny, goofy team. Why? Same as you were saying, like, maybe we could surprise people a little more often by doing something a bit more committed or grounded, or just maybe even not quote unquote funny.
Yeah. I mean, so that's an interesting point. We'll close out on that. You guys, and you in particular, because you're right here in front of me right now.
Fair.
But you guys, the funny and the energy and the fun is always going to be there. Right? Mm-hmm. That is what you have.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can try anything, and that's going to come with you.
Mm-hmm.
Before you run the risk of what makes you shine, mm-hmm. burying it behind, burdening yourself with trying things. You know, it's like, ooh, I lost everything that was great about me in trying to be so dogmatic with this.
Yeah.
But now it's like, that'll be there. That's mm-hmm. going to come through. That Winslow, it's going to be a Winslow show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that energy, that fun, that enthusiasm, mm-hmm. those belly laughs are going to be there. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think you can take a big swing. You can swing for the fences. You know, what makes you shine, Mono, is always going to be there. So if you want to do something hyper committed, your essence is still going to be there. It's just going to be that. It's just going to be focused through whatever you're trying it on.
Yeah. And I thank you for giving me that sincere push to try it. I'm so serious. This is
no, I know. It's just like
we're talking about
we're washing
improv.
Each other's balls here.
We're so stupid.
People, this is a long form conversation. This is why people are tuning in.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's it for everybody out there.
Yep.
It's like, hey, you know, write a goal down. Write an improv. Even if you've been doing improv for a long time, write it down
mm-hmm.
and then and try to pull it off, because you can get comfortable with anything, you know, and with improv too. Do you have any plugs, man?
Oh my gosh. Just, oh yeah, you know what? Sure. I don't know when this will come out, but we're currently doing, we have two more shows of UCB Drag Race coming up at UCB Franklin on March 25th, on April 22nd. Find me online at Mono Agapian.
Great, man. I love watching you perform.
I adore watching you perform.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Thank you for being here, guys. And that was a long-form conversation. Just so you guys know, next week's episode will pick up with a new round of improvisers based out of New York. But fear not, because Mono will be returning as your host in 5 weeks. So, you guys, I want to thank you for listening to me. Everybody's fucking bored with me right now. But I love you guys, and I know you love hearing Mono, so that was fun. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.
Thanks to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, for their support. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all their craft beer. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx.